What I want to talk about today is a fascinating text from the ancient world, only discovered recently. In fact, it only came into the public eye in 2006, so just over 10 years ago. And this manuscript that was discovered contains a book called The Gospel of Judas. That's its ancient title, the title that's written at the end of the book, just like it is often in ancient books. Now, this title, The Gospel of Judas, is a bit of a strange one. Gospel is a piece of early Christian jargon, meaning good news about Jesus, but it's the Gospel of Judas, not written by him, but about him in some sense. You know, so Judas, in this Gospel of Judas, is almost the main character. And that's surprising because Judas, in the conventional Gospel story in the Bible, is a villain. He's the arch-villain of the Gospel story, the one who betrayed Jesus in the time of his in the last days of his life, and this betrayal by Judas led to Jesus' crucifixion. So there's something odd here, something odd about Judas being such an important and significant player in this story. So that's what I'm going to be looking at in this lecture. First of all, what sort of thing is it that we have? What is this manuscript that survives down to the present day? Well, this is a manuscript written in the ancient Egyptian language of Coptic. That's what we've got here. And this manuscript probably comes from the 4th century AD or 4th century CE. This is what scholars guessed initially on the basis of the handwriting. But this manuscript has also had a privilege which not many other ancient manuscripts have had. That is, it's been carbon dated. A fragment of the papyrus has been analysed by scientists. Now, the text of the Gospel of Judas is written on papyrus, and papyrus obviously comes from papyrus plants. Now, papyrus plants, like all living things, contain a particular form of carbon, carbon-14, it's called. And all living things which contain this special type of carbon, when they die, this particular carbon undergoes radioactive decay. It's a radioactive form of carbon which decays when the thing it's in, when the living being it's in dies. And because scientists know how quickly this decay takes place, they can work out how long a particular living thing has been dead, and in this case, how long this particular papyrus plant has been dead, the papyrus that the text is written on. And this scientific testing confirmed what scholars who study ancient handwriting had thought, that again, this comes from around the 4th century AD or 4th century CE. So it really is definitely an ancient work. It's not a modern forgery like, for example, the Gospel of Jesus' Wife, a modern forgery that's been in the newspapers recently. But this manuscript is a copy of the original Gospel of Judas. It's not the original composition, not the first time it was written down. We know that because some church fathers, ancient Christian scholars, refer to the Gospel of Judas before the 4th century. And in fact, the original Gospel of Judas was written in the 2nd century CE, 200 years before this particular copy, or copy of a copy of a copy. And this manuscript in Coptic isn't just a copy, it's also a translation as well. Translation from the original into Coptic, because we know that it was originally written in ancient Greek. So that's the physical thing that we've actually got that's now kept in a museum in Cairo. And from the gaps in the manuscript, we can work out that we've roughly got about 85% of the content. We've got the beginning of the text and we've got the end of the text. So we can work out from that, on the basis of the gaps, that we've got about 85% of it. So what's this text all about? Well, it's set in the last week of Jesus' ministry, during the time when Jesus and his disciples are celebrating Passover, just when Jesus is betrayed by Judas and crucified, executed on Good Friday. And this happens around AD 30, when the Romans were in charge of Judea. That's why Jesus, when he's handed over by the Jewish authorities to the Romans, that's why he's crucified, executed by the Romans. And Judas was key in this. He was one of the 12 disciples of Jesus, but for some reason became frustrated or disillusioned by Jesus, and so saw the chance to earn a profit by handing Jesus over to the leaders at the time. That's the basic historical account that we have from the New Testament, and which parts of which are confirmed by other evidence as well outside of the Bible. Now, what we find in the Gospel of Judas is something quite different. The Gospel of Judas deliberately takes this conventional story and subverts it, turns it on its head. In the Gospel of Judas, Judas is not a villain, but is actually the one special disciple chosen by Jesus to receive Jesus' real revelation. Judas is the only one of the disciples who knows who Jesus really is. As it says in the work here, Judas said to him, "I know who you are and from where you have come. You have come from the immortal aeon of Barbelo, and the one who sent you is one whose name I'm not worthy to speak." I'll come back to the details of what that means later, but here it's clear that Judas knows who Jesus really is. And because of this, Jesus chooses Judas to be the one to receive all the mysteries of his revelation, as the text says here. Jesus, knowing that Judas was also pondering other exalted things, said to him, "Separate yourself from them," that's the other disciples, "I will speak to you the mysteries of the kingdom." And so a large chunk of the Gospel of Judas is about this revelation, what Jesus calls the mysteries of the kingdom. So what is this revelation then? Well, that's what's key to the Gospel of Judas. Not Jesus dying on the cross and rising again, like in conventional Christian thought, but knowing this true revelation. This knowledge is about how the supreme God figure in the Gospel of Judas is completely disconnected from our material world. Unlike in conventional Jewish and Christian thought, the supreme God in the Gospel of Judas is not the creator, isn't the one who made the world. The Gospel of Judas would disagree with that first sentence in the Bible, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." And for the reason for this, as I say, is that the true God is someone who doesn't get involved in any messy work of creation and can't come into contact with the material world. This is how the Gospel of Judas describes this supreme God. Jesus said, "Come and I will teach you about what no one has seen. For a great limitless aeon exists whose measure no generation of angels has seen. In it is," and here we have the name of the supreme God, "the great and invisible spirit, whom no angel's eye has seen, nor has the thought of a mind received it, nor has it been called by any name." So this figure is pure spirit, and only a person's soul can have any contact with this spirit. The material world is not made by the highest God, but is actually made by demons. They were trying to make something real, trying to make something in imitation of the supreme God, but actually made a pathetic and pale imitation of the real thing. In fact, not only a weak, inferior copy, but actually something evil. That's what the Gospel of Judas thinks about this world. And so it calls the Gospel of Judas, the Gospel of Judas calls the world corruption and chaos and Hades. Hades is the Greek term for the underworld, where spirits go when they die. But the Gospel of Judas actually calls this world that we live in now the underworld, or Hades. Now, like a lot of other thinkers at the time, the author of the Gospel of Judas is very much influenced by the Greek philosopher Plato. Now, Plato lived in the 4th century BC in Athens, and has been a hugely influential philosopher in the whole history of philosophy. In fact, the Cambridge philosopher Alfred North Whitehead said that the whole of European philosophy can be summed up as a series of footnotes to Plato. And already in the 2nd century AD or CE, when the author of the Gospel of Judas was writing, Plato was already very influential then. Now, what this gospel gets from Plato is the fact that there's a distinction, a big distinction, a big difference between the world down here that we see around us and the world of ideas up there that we apprehend, that we understand by our minds. So the world that we can grasp by our senses and the true reality that we can grasp by our minds. And the world down here is only a pale reflection, a pale imitation of the world of ideas up there. And the Gospel of Judas really does think that the world down here is a serious distortion, as I mentioned earlier. The Gospel of Judas thinks that this world and our physical bodies are actually made by demons, as we can see from the text here. As the text puts it, "Then Sackless said to his angels, 'Let us make man according to the likeness and the image.' And they created Adam and his wife Eve." So how can we know this true reality and escape from this evil world that we find ourselves stuck in? Well, the answer to that is Jesus comes and reveals the truth about the real God and the nature of true reality. Well, so far that's pretty standard Christian stuff. But it's very unlike, in other respects, it's very unlike what we find in the other Gospels in the New Testament. Look at what Jesus says according to the Gospel of Judas about his crucifixion, for example. "Tomorrow, the one who bears me will be tormented. Truly, I say to you all, no human mortal hand will do me harm against me. You," that's Judas, "will be greater than them all, for you will sacrifice the man who carries me about." So remember that for the Gospel of Judas, the material realm is something evil, something that God couldn't possibly come into contact with. So if Jesus is divine, as this text assumes, then he can't really have become a human being. He can't really have become incarnate like in the conventional Christian thinking of the time. No, the Jesus here in the Gospel of Judas is carried about by a human being. And so when Jesus is crucified, according to this text here, he's not really harmed. So the Gospel of Judas portrays the body of Jesus as like the car carrying around the driver. The body is only the car, not part of the driver. So Jesus doesn't really have any real dealings with the world. When this text was first published in 2006, the Mail on Sunday announced it on the front page as follows: "World exclusive, the Gospel of Judas Iscariot, greatest archaeological discovery of all time, threat to 2,000 years of Christian teaching." Now, the Mail obviously assumes here that we can use the Gospel of Judas to undermine conventional historical accounts of Jesus and Christianity. So how do we go about assessing whether an ancient text like this is historically reliable? Well, in the first place, we know it was written in the 2nd century CE, 2nd century AD, so it might perhaps contain real historical information about Jesus that we couldn't find elsewhere. Unfortunately, though, this is very unlikely. This is because it's obvious that the Gospel of Judas knows the conventional account of Jesus and is deliberately playing with it, deliberately seeking to undermine it. That's why there's a focus on Judas. That's why it's the Gospel of Judas. It's aiming to be a subversive, controversial, provocative work. It claims to add in secret revelation that most people don't know. A bit like the 2012 film about Abraham Lincoln. This film knows the conventional biography of Abraham Lincoln, but plays with it. You know that Abraham Lincoln, in the middle of the 19th century, was president by day. The film supplies the secret information that he was a vampire hunter by night. The Gospel of Judas is doing something similar to this. There are also some historical howlers, what people often call anachronisms, things from a later time which are imported back into an earlier time. Let's return to what Judas said on one of the previous slides. "Judas said to him, 'I know who you are and from where you have come. You have come from the immortal aeon of Barbelo, and the one who sent you is the one whose name I am not worthy to speak.'" Now, Jesus coming from the immortal aeon of Barbelo is not something anyone would have said if they were a Jew in AD 30 in Palestine. But the immortal aeon of Barbelo, which is one of the higher levels of heaven, according to ancient mythology, this immortal aeon of Barbelo was a common theme in certain heresies in the 2nd century AD. And so the original readers would probably have known that this was the kind of thing that Jesus the Jew who lived in the previous century would never have said. It's obviously an anachronism, a bit like if we were to read an account of Queen Victoria downloading songs on her iTunes account, we'd know that it wasn't a real historical account. Now, in some ways, that might seem like a rather boring conclusion. The Gospel of Judas isn't really a threat to 2,000 years teaching, as the Mail on Sunday proclaimed. In fact, it's the four New Testament Gospels which are closest to Jesus in time and culture and the most reliable witnesses. So what's the point, then, of studying this Gospel of Judas? Well, it may not be historically reliable in what it claims to present, but it does give us a fascinating window onto early Christian controversies that were happening in the second century. Debates about how Jesus can be both God and man. Debates about the interaction between Christianity and Greek philosophy. It raises fascinating religious questions like, should religion be about knowledge or about faith, about reason or faith? What's the relation between the soul and the body? Is the world that we live in irreparably evil, or is it a world which is made by God and which God is going to redeem? Should religions reinvent themselves on the basis of contemporary philosophy? Can we trust the Mail on Sunday? These are still lively debates today. Thank you very much for listening. I leave you with some questions.